Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions vanquished at the hands of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 20-16 this past Sunday. They got the Arizona Cardinals coming up this Sunday out in the desert. We're going to get into talking about what happened against the Buccaneers, and we'll be previewing the game against the Cardinals. Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Well, I don't know. You can't even put it like that because they weren't like a commanding lead and ended up blowing it. I don't know. It was a lackluster performance, definitely by the offense. A performance by Aiden Hutchinson squandered. What are your thoughts, Eric?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think the offense left points on the table. And when you do that against a really good defense, then you have a chance to lose the game, and they couldn't, when they couldn't close things out, is that sure enough, they lost. You know, there's a lot of teams, a lot of really good teams that lost this week. So I'm not overly worried. There are things that obviously need to be corrected. And, you know, the offense, I think, is the one part of the team that I'm like the most confident in. So I fully expect them to be better in the games to come. I thought the defense played better in week two than they did in week one. So as soon as the offense decides to right the ship, I think the team is going to get back to its winning ways. But yeah, it was surely disappointing. But even with a disappointing performance, they were still in it up until the literal last play. So, you know, you can, I totally get people getting frustrated, and I totally get pessimism coming out of that game. At the same time, I think if you want to be optimistic, you can find things to be optimistic about as well.
Really? I mean, mm-hmm. You're 100% right. It's only been two games, and the offense does have to right the ship. You know, things certainly aren't, they're far from the end of the world, but mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll talk about the things to be optimistic about. Maybe it's all on the defensive side of the ball. I'm just, I guess, thinking too much on the offensive side. Let's first get into the transactions. Sure. Kicker Greg Joseph has been poached off the Giants practice squad. And then
poached by the Giants.
The Giants have poached right. Greg Joseph off the practice squad, excuse me. And Lions bring in Matthew McCrane to join the practice squad. He's another UFL, XFL guy.
Yep. He's pretty efficient, pretty big leg, and has experience kicking off in the new system. So it's a nice add, I think, considering the kicking talent that was out there. He was a guy that I think is certainly capable. So, you know, you trade one veteran kicker for another and you keep the kicker competition going. But so far, you know, Jake Bates has been perfect through two games. So that's all you can ask out of him.
All right. Injury report. First up, wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown. What turns out to be a quad injury, full practice mm-hmm. both Wednesday and Thursday, sucked the life out of that stadium when he was hobbled, when he was on the ground. And then, of course, you know, sure. got him back to life when he jogged off the field.
Yeah, he got hit in the thigh with a shoulder pad. And that is what took him down at the end of the third. And then he started cramping and basically like just couldn't get his muscles to work. And he got yanked and couldn't get, you know, hydrated quickly enough. He was trying to, you know, he said he could feel it coming on in the second half. And so he started like slamming as much liquids as he could, but he just could never keep pace. He was sweating it out too fast and couldn't keep that liquids coming in quick enough. And so it ended up getting him at the end. And I think it was pretty critical when it did hit him because right at the end, when they really could have used a veteran set of hands, they didn't have it. And, you know, you end up having to force passes to J-Mo instead. And, you know, it just bad circumstances. So on the positive, he's been practicing in full. The quad injury is just a contusion, so it's just a pain management thing, and he should be good to go. Yeah, I don't think we're going to see much limitation on him at all this week.
Still played 93% of the snaps on mm-hmm. Sunday. Mm-hmm. All right, The wide receiver Isaiah Williams, abdomen injury, limited on Wednesday and Thursday. He wasn't active for the game on Sunday.
Yeah, I got hurt at the end of last week, missed the game because of it, and then I don't know how big of a role he would have had, but it seems very likely that his inability to play is what prompted another Tom Kennedy elevation, because Tom's been elevated now twice out of the three times he's eligible to. Returning to practice for Isaiah Williams this week is a good sign, and maybe he, you know, is active again, is like a wide receiver five, because I'm expecting them to elevate Tim Patrick or sign Tim Patrick this weekend.
I'm all set with the Tom Kennedy experiment for now. That one kickoff return where he kind of took it away from Khalif Raymond, they were obviously kicking it to Tom Kennedy. I don't know. I mean, he's
right,
not terrible, but I'd rather see the ball in Khalif Raymond's hands. All right. Next up, left guard, Graham Glasgow, knee injury, did not practice on Wednesday, upgraded to limited practice on Thursday.
Yeah, so trending in the right direction. If you're an optimist, you're liking what you're seeing, and you're expecting him to be ready to go. But in reality, you want to make sure that he gets in another practice on Friday before you feel too confident that he's ready to go. If he's not, it's either going to be Aushika or Michael Neese. And Aushika has been doing left guard reps pretty much all of camp. So it's very possible he could step in, but at the same time, I do think Glasgow, you know, he was available in the locker room on Wednesday, even though he didn't practice. He's been available in practice. It's like, so I think the way that they're treating him, it's very much like they would treat a guy who they expect to play.
Edge, Marcus Davenport, groin injury. Full practice Wednesday, Thursday. He was inactive for the Buccaneers game.
Yeah, missed practice all of last week, didn't play in the game, and then all of a sudden is able to practice in full. So good bounce back. Surely seems like he's on the right path to play as well. They will need his athleticism and versatility opposite Hutchinson, in my opinion, especially for the strategy that they'll want to have against the Cardinals.
Linebacker Alex Anzalone, concussion, did not practice Wednesday, upgraded to limited practice Thursday, which I would say is a good sign.
Yeah, that means he's progressing through the protocol, right? He still has some steps to go, but he's at least stepping in the right direction. So he's still got a few more hurdles to clear before he, you know, you can feel confident he's going to play, but steps in the right direction. Did you happen to see how he was concussed? Did you see the hit itself? It was pretty, pretty, pretty harsh. It was you could feel it when he got hit.
I did not see it. I was not paying attention to that portion of the field.
I didn't know if you happened to see a replay or something like that. It basically, some friendly fire from Derek Barnes, where Barnes essentially missed Kyler Murray, or Kyler Murray, missed Baker Mayfield on Baker Mayfield's touchdown game run. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was coming from the front, and Anzalone was coming from the back, and they basically just faced off and smashed each other. And so, yeah, it was not good. He got him right in the face.
All right, cornerback, Terrion Arnold, illness. He did have a finger in. Now there's no finger injury, right? But he was sick this week, did not practice Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, the finger injury happened during the game, and but now he's sick and he's missed a couple of days. Unfortunately, he's missed some practice, but fortunately, the way they're talking about him, it's kind of like with Glasgow, where it's like, they're expecting him to go. They're expecting him to play. And so the illness is hopefully not something that lingers, and, you know, just give him a couple of days to make sure that he's fully right.
Cornerback Ennis Rakestraw, hamstring, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. Of course, was inactive last week.
Yeah, hamstring gets injured 4 minutes before inactives are due during warmups for the game. Hey, and so
perfect timing.
Yeah.
You're going to miss the game.
So he, they make him inactive, and then he hasn't been able to practice this week. So that's not ideal. hamstring injuries can take like a week, which means maybe he's just starting to get back ready to practice maybe this weekend, which is probably going to be a little too late for the Cardinals game. But I don't think it doesn't look like it's anything long term, but I mean, we'll see. Hamstrings can be kind of wonky, so I hopefully it's not something that'll linger.
Safety Kirby Joseph back. Hamstring injury was removed. Limited Wednesday, full practice Thursday.
Yeah, so he's been dinged up. The back injury is the new one this week. They're taking it easy with him, but they're also, he practiced in full on Wednesday, so he should be good to go too.
Safety Ifeyi Melifonwu, ankle injury, did not practice Wednesday, Thursday. He was not active on Sunday.
Yeah, he's in trouble. Like, right? Like, I mean, like he's practiced one time this whole regular season. Even if he were to come back and practice on Friday, he would start an acclimation process, like a reacclimation process. And so he's unfortunately pretty much toast. As far as like this game, could he make it back for week four? I mean, maybe depending on if he were to come back like tomorrow, but like I don't see him playing in this game. And then can he come back? Yeah, I
That
don't
extra
know.
couple days for
When?
Monday Night
Yeah.
Football.
Yeah, it'll be
2 weeks.
when though, right? But at the same time, I could also see them saying, you're not going to reacclimate in a week. Plus, we have the bye week coming up after that, so the vibes around him right now are kind of negative. And every day that he misses is another day he's probably going to have to rehab. So it's a tough spot. And I think they're starting to really. They could potentially be regret the fact that they didn't place him on IR, because missing already two games and look and headed for a third is not great.
Be a late season weapon like he was, like playmaking weapon like he was
Yeah.
last year.
Yeah. Ideally, that'd be great.
All right, let's talk about this Bucks game. Lions very just disjointed on offense, although it is worth stating, they outgained the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
They it's not twice as many plays, but they run like 60% more plays than the Buccaneers ran on Sunday. Like, I guess there could be some optimism there, Eric. Like
Yeah.
there it is. Like, they did outplay Tampa, which isn't a bad team. They just
No.
couldn't get it done. Well, that's the disappointing part. But another game where Goff doesn't look good. You throw it capped off with that last play, last offensive play of the game.
Yeah.
Running game was okay, but it wasn't consistent. And then at times when it's like you got to plow it up the middle, they're running left to right. They're stretching it out to the sidelines and. Tampa's quick defensively, and they were able to get to him. I don't know.
It's just kind of,
Very
it's more,
confusing.
yeah. If you look at the play distribution though, from pass to run, they were very heavy pass, and that's it mirrors what they did in the playoff game. They had a lot of passes in the playoff game, and then maybe like two-thirds of the plays were offensive plays were passes. And then you just need they were just but they were just very efficient in their running in that playoff game. And they went north and south in that running game during the playoff game, but changed that for I'm not sure why. I don't know why they decided to go east west. I don't know why they decided to just pepper a bunch of screens in there. But against a fast defense, that didn't work. Screens didn't work, lateral movement didn't work. But in my mind, they basically were like, let's re replicate what we did in the playoff game against them, and there's add a few more wrinkles that maybe they're not expecting, and maybe those wrinkles were like screens and lateral movement. But it just Tampa knew it. They saw it, they read it, they had the athleticism to get there, and Lions didn't adjust, and they just kept going back to the well that wasn't working. So. It was frustrating. They did produce a lot of offensive plays, and they produced a lot of offensive statistics. But they were one of seven in their red zone trips, right? Or something like that. Like
Yeah, that sounds right.
it was just You can't do that. You can't get down there and then not finish. And that's what they did over and over and over. And so disappointing day for sure, because if you convert a couple of those, the game's probably not even close. But they kind of got hung up, and they never really found an answer on how to, you know, get it in the end zone.
And you even kind of mentioned it. They didn't even need to get it in the end zone. There are
four
clear drives. You know, the big one, the one that everybody's going to remember is the end of the first half.
Yeah.
Campbell, who took the blame, who knows? Was it really his blame, or is Phipp yelling for guys to get on the field?
Phipp said it was equally his fault as it was Campbell's fault today. He said that. So, but I think that's just people, you know, trying to take the heat.
Yeah. It's once again, this is not end of the world type stuff, but it is a major gaffe.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to give it to the players too. This is, you know, partially on them. Like, you know, they, you can look at the clock, and they have to talk about this in practice and run. If there's, what was it, 7 seconds? Like, you're not going to be able to run out there and kick a field goal. And you know it's third down. You know he can down the ball. You know, like it.
Yeah, the play was
infuriating. That was a terrible sequence of events.
Certainly. So at 11 seconds, the play ends, and that's when they rush to the line to spike the ball. And they spike the ball at 7 seconds. But at 11 seconds, the big guys start running out there, and the big guys can't run off. They can't stop and then turn and get back off the field in that 4 second window. And that's what, you know, that's what cost them. You know, they have a, just like anything, like they have these, they have a list of when you're supposed to call timeouts, when you're supposed to do this, when you go for it on fourth downs. They have lists for everything, right? And so they have a list of how many seconds do you need left on the clock in order to do a fire drill. And I think at one point they probably had enough time and they were like, okay, be ready. But then once they got caught in bounds and with a running clock in 11 seconds, you absolutely had no time to do a fire drill. You had to spike it. And that message either didn't get delivered properly, or somebody said, we're going to go field goal. And they thought, okay, let's run on and do a fire drill, when maybe he meant, you know, we're going to spike the ball, then do a field goal. It just, poor miscommunication, poor delivery on what expectations were. And that falls on coaching. I mean, I know the players did it, but somebody had to have said to them, go. And then,
because there was five guys or whatever that ran out there.
Oh, yeah, at least.
Like it was just one guy who screwed that up. Yeah.
Yeah. It sure seems like it was the coaching staff that made that mistake.
Then it's the Goff interception to nobody.
I don't know that one.
The third or fourth quarter, like right in the middle of the field. Although that was at the Tampa Bay 28, you know, it's not like they were in the red zone there, but there's another field goal there. And now, once again, the transitive property of football, just because if they would have gotten that field goal at halftime, doesn't mean that that's what was going to happen. Goff threw the interception. And then at the end of the game, the third from last possession, right, with 1 minute left on the clock, 1:01 left on the clock, the Lions don't kick the field goal, go for it on fourth down, because they were at the Tampa 11, if I have that right. And you're standing, and I didn't think, like, it's too early in the season for me, and I'm really disappointed in myself that I missed this, standing there on the, because it's like, all right, that's it, that's over. But then it's like, no, it's not. Lions have all three timeouts. They can maybe they didn't think they could stop them. Maybe they didn't think they would be able to get a three and out of them. But then they did. If they kicked the field goal there, got three and out on Tampa. Now this means they probably have to go a longer length of the field when they got the ball back. But like, they could have gotten their 6 points to win the game that way. You know,
right? I think in that situation they were looking at it as, boy, we're close enough, let's just go for it, because we can normally get that yardage, right? And it just didn't happen.
It was fourth and eight. And I kind of do get that. It's like, well, we can get 8 yards, still get a first down. We might not score right away, and then we could drain the rest of the clock. I don't know. I guess, it's easy hindsight 2020, but it's like, well, if they have 40 seconds, if they can stop them, you know, if they can get them to go three and out.
I feel like we've seen games like this occasionally in his in Campbell's history where it's like instead of taking the field goal, he goes for it on fourth down because that's what the analytics say. And but he does it, he tries it like three, four times, and then you know those add up, right? Because yeah, I think when you're that far down and you think you can get it, you know, you are going to leave them in a really long field, and so, but you know, maybe things are different if you kick off and then they get the ball at the 40 as opposed to inside their 10 or whatever it was. But yeah, it was a frustratingly inefficient night from the offense, even though those they did put up a lot of
yardage.
Statistics. Yeah.
And the waste of the great fake punt. What a great fake punt.
Like, yeah, certainly.
Because the life was like you and I, you were always at the game, but I happened to be at the game myself. And like the life is sucked out of the stadium. Everybody's kind of disappointed that they're punting the ball. People are going up, you know, to get a beverage, you know, it's like, cause they're going to miss the punt, but there's nothing going on in the stadium. Then poof, you know, Fox comes to life where he gets the snap and Tampa didn't see it coming at all. You know, like
no.
it was a great play call. And then they squandered that because they only get what, like one other first down and they got to punt it away again. Anyways.
Yeah. They had to convert two fourth downs.
Right. Yeah. Cause they got Montgomery, right? Got the next fourth down. Yep.
And then they get a, and then how many times in a game have you ever seen the team go for it twice on fourth down and still have to punt?
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it doesn't happen often.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Crazy. I talked to Vaki after the game in the locker room, and he was talking about how nervous he was. He was saying he was going out there thinking about how just catch the ball, just catch the ball, just catch the ball. And then you know, there's a chance for them to call off depending on the coverage.
Yeah,
and he got
the
up.
Look. Yeah.
Yeah, he got up and saw the look and he's like, oh, they're gonna call this off. There's no way they're gonna, and then they did. I mean, it looked easy. I mean, it looks so easy.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, that was a perfect play. Like they,
yeah.
It because the one Tampa guy that did cue, you know, get cued in
late.
On it to be able to make a play. Yeah, he was too far behind the play and he was coming across the field, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball. I kind of mentioned it already, but Aiden Hutchinson, absolutely dominant, 4.5 sacks. He's got we haven't gotten to that part of the podcast, but got another favorable matchup coming up on Sunday.
Yeah.
What is it? Tied for second most sacks in a game in Lions history?
Correct. He might even be alone, but I know it's second. The record's 5.5. He did it in 4.5. The pressures, they've only recorded pressures since like 2006 or something like that. So he holds the record for 5 pressures in a game. Or I'm sorry, quarterback hits. They've only recorded those for since like 2006. So he holds the record with 5, but he's done it. He's had like 5 quarterback hits like 4 times in his career already. Like he's done it quite a bit. Yeah, he had a whole bunch of things that he, you know, set records for, and then doesn't get defensive player of the week, ironically, which was a bit strange that they gave that what's his name, the Bengals safety.
Oh no, Atlanta safety.
Atlanta
Bates.
Safety
used to
yeah.
be Jesse Bates.
Used to be,
right?
with,
used to be
with the Bengals. Safety. Thank you. That's right. Yeah, because he has an interception.
That was a whale of an ending on Monday night. That was quite a game.
Sure, certainly. I don't think it was defensive player of the week worthy, where you have a guy who has 4.5 sacks, but you know, whatever.
Team won. I guess maybe that tips the scales.
I 100% believe that. But yeah, Hutchinson, you know, he's got 5.5 sacks now through 2 games. Like you said, favorable matchup. We'll see how high he can get that, but he certainly seems on his way to having yet again another career year, and he just keeps getting better and better. So it's awfully awfully impressive day. Every one of his sacks came when he was at left defensive end, going up against the right tackle, and they ended up the first two, I think maybe even the first three, they just singled him up. And then for the other two, they chipped him and it didn't matter. And he still found ways to get through the chip and the right tackle to get those sacks. So it's, he's something, man. He's just getting better and better.
One man wrecking crew. And even, but even under all that duress, Mayfield still came up with the big plays when he needed to. They didn't run many. They only ran like 48 mm-hmm. offensive plays. They didn't generate a ton of yards. We've already talked about that.
They were efficient though.
Yeah, when they needed it, he came through. And it was an impressive game by him. I'm not a Baker Mayfield fan, but you know, you got it. You had to hand it to him on Sunday, because if they didn't have him, they probably wouldn't have won the game.
Well, that was our, you know, that was one of our more historic debates, right? Back in the draft class, where you were the Josh Allen fan and I was the Baker Mayfield fan. And
right.
I think we're, I still think you were more right, because Josh is the better quarterback.
It just so happened this time around, yeah.
But I do think Baker, it's always, that's always kind of been inside of him. You know what I mean? And so you get him in the right offense and the right amount of confidence, and he gets some weapons, and he's got some charisma. And look, it's hard to beat a team three times, right? And you beat them twice. Mm-hmm. And so this was, this time it was the Bucs to win.
And if the Buccaneers are going to win a game, it's, I'd much rather have it be this one than last January.
So, certainly.
Chris Godwin had a big game. Most of it was against Carlton Davis. He happened to be in coverage against him. At least what I saw. I don't know. You might have the straight up numbers on that.
His big play was the one with the busted coverage up the left sideline, where they show a screen and he's supposed to block and he fake blocks and then releases and then they catch him. I think Terrion vacated his zone there. I think they were in like a cover three.
I thought it was in zone. Yeah, I thought that might be zone.
Yeah, because Jack wasn't over far enough and Robinson was underneath, and so Terrion should have been over the top and he wasn't, and that opened the door for a big play.
Snap counts were interesting on the defensive side of the ball, because it's a lot different than what we're used to seeing. Mm. You know, same two safeties on the field for the entire game. Nobody came out. Same thing with corners. Like, it was Arnold Davis. Robertson was in there when they go five defensive backs. Vildor up on the field only four times. Same thing with the linebacker. Same linebacker. Well, linebackers were all over the place. Never mind, because Anzalone got hurt, and then they started bringing it. They started shuttling in everybody, but I don't know. Interesting. Like I that they stuck with the, I mean, they were fine. You know, they only gave a big day for Godwin, but overall they only had like 180 some yards passing.
Right.
So
rushing was low. Was low too as well. I really think they want to be the best run defense team in the NFL. And I really believe they're willing to play half their snaps in base defense and half their snaps in nickel in order to be the best run defense in the NFL. And so they're going to play a ton of base. That's what we've seen through two games. And so I think they're really showing us the defense that they want. They want to be, they want to have like a straight 4-3. And just be comfortable with that and rely on their four defensive backs to kind of hold the fort down, and they have the four that they like, and then they have a fifth when they need it. And I think this is kind of what they want.
Great segue, Eric, because you want to be the number one run defense in the league, and you want to show it off. They've got a good matchup going into week three, because the Cardinals rushed for 231 yards against the Rams this past Sunday. So if the Lions want to show off how good of a run defense they are, like dry up that Arizona running game. Games on Sunday, currently Lions favored by 3. Mm-hmm. Sunday, 4:25 Eastern start. So, you know, we're all over the place once again.
Yeah.
This is the three different start times.
Mm.
On Fox, Chris Myers, Mark Sklareth, and Jen Hales down on the field. Referees Brad Rogers, sixth season as referee, 13 penalties per game, and the average is running about 13 penalties a game. Just a little bit under.
Yeah. the start times are really throwing me off, because it's a fourth start time in week four as well that we have to get used to. So this first you know, quote unquote quarter of the season is it's taking some adjusting to get used to. And I think the Lions will be okay. I honestly, like, on the road, when you have a rough game where the best part of your team doesn't do well, I sometimes think going on the road helps. I mean, it's not going to help from a communication standpoint, because the crowd will be booing and whatnot, but it sometimes alleviates some pressure, and you tend to perform a little cleaner when you're on the road after a game where you weren't as efficient as you normally are.
Games at State Farm Stadium. Last time the Lions played there, back in 2020, Lions got the win 26-23. I'm just looking at it real quick, and Lions, I don't know, they have a mixed bag results against the Cardinals. Like,
yeah,
they hold the all time series, and it always feels like they beat the Cardinals, but I don't know.
It's been more mixed, yeah, of late, because remember, they're playing each other like every year. And it was in Arizona like 3 years in a row or something like that, I believe.
Right. So, 2018, 2019, 2020. Lions. Yeah. And so in that time, okay, the Lions have won four out of the last five, and the fifth one was a tie.
Okay.
So
okay.
Maybe I was right. Yeah. The feeling of beating the Cardinals all the time. And that even goes back years and years, at least, you know, our lifetime.
Sure.
But so not a house of horrors for the Lions, but the four. Right. I like how the 4:25 start time is probably going to affect us more than it would the team.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, so. Yeah, we got a new team. The team's like, well, whatever. It's 1:25 out there. They're going to be in the Pacific time zone. All right. Shane Steichen's the head coach. Wait, is he the head coach? Yeah, he's the head coach.
No, Jonathan Gannon.
No, Jonathan Gannon. Shane Steichen's in back of my thing. He's the Indianapolis coach. I was reading something on Indianapolis earlier. Never mind. Jonathan Gannon's head coach.
Yep.
Key additions in free agency for the Cardinals. Wide receiver Zay Jones. He's suspended. Right tackle Jonah Williams is on IR. Left guard Evan Brown. Defensive lineman Justin Jones. Defensive lineman Bilal Nichols. Cornerback Sean Murphy Bunting.
Zay Jones suspended for he was a free agent domestic, in it, but he was in a arrested for domestic violence, so he got like a 6-game or 5-game suspension from the league. Jonah Williams played in the week one, but was injured in the first half and then couldn't finish the game. He was replaced by Kelvin Beachum, and we'll talk about him a little bit more in a minute. Evan Brown, of course, the former Lion, played center and guard for the Lions, then went to Seattle for 2 years. Left Seattle, joined here in Arizona, and he's their starting left guard. Justin Jones is from the Bears. Bilal Nichols used to play for the Bears, and Murphy Bunting played at Central. So a lot of local, you know, or regional, I guess I should say, connections to some of their free agents.
Evan Brown, one of the great offensive linemen that the great Matt Patricia helped build that offensive line in Detroit. According to Bill Belichick, it's a huge reason for the Lions' current successes due to Matt Patricia. So I know I'm taking that out of context, but, you know, it's infuriating.
No, but
he's got
a
show for his guy, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. He's got a show for his guy. And, how quickly that is disproven, right? Because like Decker and Glasgow came before Matt Patricia. Ragnow was drafted while Matt Patricia was here. But that's it. Like that you have, I think, Decker.
Well, and they drafted Jonah Jackson too, but he's gone.
Right.
but that was the offensive line last year.
Right.
That was excellent. So, I mean,
yeah, but
We've said it before. Like I will never look fondly upon the Matt Patricia.
But really,
Boy
it
Wonder.
Was Bob
what
Quinn.
What was Boy Wonder? The GM.
Bob Quinn. Bob
yeah,
Quinn.
Quinn.
Yeah, Quinn. Yeah. Quinn's really the guy who identified and drafted those guys. Like if he would have said, yeah, the fruits of Bob Quinn's labor, Yeah,
And then you can't
I
really
could,
fight him too much.
yeah, I could bend the truth there for sure. But yeah,
A great offensive mind of Matt Patricia, though, both of them.
Let's not include his name anymore.
All right. Player losses. Wide receiver Marquise Brown, wide receiver Rondale Moore, offensive tackle DJ Humphries, and center Billy Price.
Yeah, so they traded Rondale Moore to Atlanta for the quarterback. What's his name? Oh my gosh, why am I blanking on his name? Oh, Desmond Ridder. Jeez. Yeah, they traded him for Desmond Ridder. Desmond Ridder then goes on to not make the team, but he's on their practice squad. So yeah, just I don't know. I like Rondale Moore. I was a bit surprised they were so
Same
willing to get rid
here.
of him. Yeah.
I've always liked Rondale Moore, and he hasn't even played for the Falcons yet.
Right. Yeah. It's life of a slot receiver in the NFL is often challenging.
Certainly one I was wrong about. I thought Rondale Moore was going to be a good NFL player. And maybe it was just because he had that, what was that? He was against Ohio State, right? He had the
Yeah, he
one
killed
monster
Ohio
game when
State.
Purdue beat
Yeah.
Ohio State. It's like,
Yeah.
man, this guy might be great in the NFL if he ends up with the right team. But
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's
Not
tough. It's
yet.
yeah, it's tough.
Right. In the draft, Cardinals had a bevy of draft picks in the first round. Fourth pick, everybody knows, wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State. Their second pick in the first round, number 27, edge defender Darius Robinson from Missouri, he's a local guy, right? And that was the guy we talked
Yeah.
about to the
Yeah.
Lions a little bit. He's
Yeah.
on injured reserve, so we
Yeah.
won't get a chance to see him. Second round, they took cornerback Max Melton. Third round, they took running back Trey Benson from Florida State, as well as offensive tackle Isaiah Adams from Illinois, tight end Tip Reinemann, also from Illinois, and cornerback Elijah Jones from Boston College. So four picks in the third round.
Yeah.
Fourth round, they took safety Taylor Dadrian Demerson from Texas Tech. Fifth round, they had three picks: edge Xavier Thomas from Clemson, offensive tackle Christian Jones from Texas, and wide receiver Tajuan Palmer from UAB. Seventh round, they took cornerback Jaden Davis from Miami.
I didn't note it in the rundown, but Christian Jones also on IR. So they have a couple of rookies on IR here, as well as a couple of their free agents that are either on that are either suspended or on IR. And then the only other IR note is BJ Ojulari is on IR as well as one of their better pass rushers. So they have when we talk about the fact that the Cardinals are relatively healthy, they are on their active roster, but they have several guys that are not available in this game. Like Zay Jones was a starter, Darius Robinson was going to challenge to start. Jonah Williams was their starting right tackle. Christian Jones was going to be their backup right guard, right tackle. And then a large
Ojulari.
Ojulari, thank you. He was also potentially, slotted for a contributing role because they like the way they rotate their edge guys. So like those are all significant guys. Like they're still down a few guys, but they're playing well even despite those losses. So it's an interesting team that is definitely I think they contended well against the Bills, but they looked like they have some hiccups, and then they took major advantage of a Rams team that just was obliterated by injury, losing guys during the game. Rams were beat up going into the Lions game. Then they lost more guys during the Lions game. Then they went into Arizona, and then they lost more guys during the Arizona game. And the Rams are a mess right now because of injuries. They're really just decimated, and Arizona just took care of business and made them look like a team that wasn't a contender at all.
Crushed the Rams from beginning to end.
Yeah.
They lost a tight one in Buffalo in week one. I should mention also for the Cardinals, they're also 1-1 headed into this game.
So like with Buffalo, like they were up 17-13 at one point in the second quarter, and they looked to be in pretty good control. And then the Bills scored late in the second quarter to get within a touchdown. And then they come out in the second half and they have a couple stops and then they get another touchdown and they tie the game and then they get another touchdown. And so like three unanswered touchdowns. And all of a sudden the Bills are now in control and the Cardinals are playing catch up. And the magic kind of went away once they had to start playing catch up.
All right, let's dig into the roster. First on offense for offensive coordinator Drew Petzing. The quarterback is Kyler Murray, who's played well thus far. This is the third number one overall pick quarterback the Lions have faced in a row, on top of having a number one overall pick quarterback themselves.
Wow.
Kyler's been good, and Call of Duty hasn't been released yet, the new one. So I don't think he's – I think he's pretty focused this week.
So Petzing – comes in and gives Kyler a different offense than what he's run in the past, right? Like, so Kyler ran a very like air raid type offense in college. And then he, you know, big spread concepts and stuff like that. And then he comes into the NFL and he gets the same thing. Like everybody wants to give him these like college type offenses to run, and he's not, I mean, he can do it, but he's not like thriving in it. And then Petzing comes in and just gives him more like a base NFL offense. And all of a sudden Murray looks like he's doing good. So Petzing's offense is kind of based like Shanahan esque, like a lot of these guys are nowadays, West Coast concepts. So you're talking like motion, play action, a lot of outside zone runs, but they'll also gap you right up the middle. A lot of two tight end sets, a lot of two tight end sets. They lean on their tight ends like quite a bit. They'll run 12 and 13 personnel a ton. They spread it around in between the ton in between the 20s, but they go for their superstars when they get in the red zone. And they're very resilient in trying to maintain their run game. So they will not give up on it per se, like whether they get a lead or whether they're behind, the running game is still going to be an important part of what they want to do. Interesting. You know, we've talked about like, last week we talked about nepotism of the coaches getting their, right. Things. This is not necessarily nepotism, but it's definitely guys following guys. It's a little bit more common here.
It's kind of how business works. So besides that's not nepotism. Besides nepotism,
right, exactly. That's where I was going with this. Is that this is more traditional? Petzing gets an intern job with the Browns back in 2013. Then he meets Norv Turner. And Norv Turner then leaves the Browns and goes to the Vikings, and Petzing goes with him. And then when he joins the Vikings, he is on the same coaching staff as Kevin Stefanski, who is now the Browns head coach, and Jonathan Gannon was also on that coaching staff, who's obviously the Cardinals head coach. And so he's with them for a couple of years. Stefanski ends up taking over for Norv Turner. Turner ends up that, or then Stefanski leaves for Cleveland. So he follows him to Cleveland and then eventually joins Gannon. So it's like he's basically like latched onto these couple of guys, and he just picked the right ones because the guys he latched onto both became head coaches. So
right.
he's got a good eye for it. He's a younger coordinator, not as young as the defensive coordinator. But he's introduced like concepts that work for Baker. And I think Baker is starting to, I'm sorry, not Baker, but Kyler.
Kyler.
And so Kyler is, I think, starting to thrive in these kind of more traditional NFL type offensive looks. And so he's going to be able to hand the ball off. He's going to take snaps under center. He's going to take snaps in the shotgun. He's going to get good protection because of the 12 and 13 personnel that they run. And and then he's still got his elusivity in the pocket as well when he feels the pressure, and he can escape, and then he can find it. He can find receivers downfield. What were you going to say?
Yeah, 116 yards rushing through two games, so 58 yards a game. I think he got like 57 in one game, 59 in the other. So dangerous on the ground for his career, averaging 38 yards per game on the ground. So Of course, he has that dimension. He's in his sixth year in the league. I think everybody's pretty well aware of what Kyler's capable of. Good numbers, 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Although he has been sacked 5 times, also very diminutive in stature. So that's an advantage for the Lions.
Yeah, the Lions are going to approach this game the same way that they've approached any mobile quarterback they've ever faced. And okay, again, let's state one more thing about Murray is that he is mobile by opportunity, not by design, right? So they're not calling quarterback draws. It's him escaping and creating is when he goes mobile, and then that's where he happens to be efficient. He's very efficient, but they don't straight up call because, like you said, he is diminutive in his size, and so they're not going to put him in harm's way unless he opts to, because he doesn't have an option that he likes. So, the Lions are going to go in. They're going to want to contain him, right? They're going to want to contain him and then just crush the pocket around him and then hope that he can't squeak out, which is what he's done. He did it a lot against the Rams, and so that means they're going to cool their jets a little bit on just like turning a guy like Aiden loose. At the same time, they're not going to want to put, you know, they're not going to want to put a restrictor on Aiden too much, because he has the ability to play the run and the pass at the same time. He has the ability to set the edge while he's also pass rushing. It's the other side of Aiden, whoever's on the opposite side of Aiden, that tends to be the one you have to slow down and make sure that they're more accountable. If Marcus Davenport stays healthy, you're probably going to see a lot of him. I also think you're going to see a lot of Derek Barnes playing that edge spot as well. And I think Derek will also play off the ball, but I really think that this is a team where they're going to want to stop the run. And so Lions are going to show a lot of base, and that'll mean Derek Barnes will be out there. And so if he's rushing the passer, you're getting him setting the edge on the opposite side. And they're going to try and contain and then contain and crush. It's the same thing they've always done. And unfortunately, they haven't always been very good at it. But I don't think they really have a solution, right? Like they're not going to run a spy. They don't want to run a spy. They don't care to run a spy. They don't think spies are effective. And so they're not going to do it. And instead, they're just going to try and play like a controlled type style of defense and pressure with their front, a slow pressure with their front, and then hope their secondary can hold up in coverage.
All right, running back position. Starters, James Conner. They also have Trey Benson, Amari DiMercato, DJ Dallas. Conner, not a great running back, but solid NFL running back.
I really like Conner. He's a big bulldozer. He runs with power. He's their lead guy. They're going to give him the ball more often than not. He's on the field, you know, like between 60% and 70% of the time. And he's the guy that is a nice counterbalance to what Kyler is, right? Kyler's the kind of quick guy that, you know, he's going to escape if he gets the opportunity. But if you're going in, you know, with a lighter box because you're trying to account for Kyler, then he's going to run you over with his power. And so it's a nice balance that they have. Benson is the rookie. He's a little bit more agile. He's more of the lightning to Connor's thunder. DiMercato is really like efficient. And if you look at like his like efficiency scores or his PFF scores, like they're super high, but he's carried the ball like 4 times. Like it's just, he happens to be very good on those couple of plays. He's not really a big factor in their offense. DJ Dallas is their kick returner, and he housed one. He's one of the guys where they decided that I think the Bills kicked off to him, and he took it to the house. So, he's not very impactful on the offense, on the offensive side of the ball. But special teams, he's got some chops.
All right, wide receiver group: Marvin Harrison Jr., Michael Wilson, Greg Dortch. So if they go 3 wide receivers, those are the 3. They also have Chris Moore, Zach Pascal, and Xavier Weaver.
Yeah, so you know Marvin's their big guy. He's going to get the majority of their snaps.
He's the guy.
Yeah, and so
Successor to Larry Fitzgerald as the next star Arizona Cardinal wide receiver.
right. Buffalo basically, they kind of bracketed him. Like they would use bracket coverage every once in a while, drop a safety over the top of him, and he caught one pass for 4 yards. The Rams did not use a safety over the top of him, and he caught four passes for 130 and two touchdowns. And if you've watched those plays, every single one of his four catches were a busted coverage by the safety. Safety didn't take the right angle. Safety gave up over the top coverage because he was trying to cover somebody else. Every single one of those was the safety making a mistake that created opportunities for Marvin to get like behind the defense and make some big plays. So, super talented kid. But he only get he he's so far through two games, he's only gotten a handful of targets. And so you're going to have to account for him, and you're going to have to take him away, and you may even have to use over the top coverage like a bracket, basically because he has that capability. He has the capability to blow it open on four catches, right? Like he has. So you're gonna have you, I don't know if you're necessarily gonna give him the Justin Jefferson type treatment, but you have to have something adjacent to that on the at the ready because he demands it. And Dortch is their slot guy. He only plays about a third of the snaps, but he's effective enough that Dan Campbell unpromptedly mentioned him as an efficient player that they were worried about. And so it's another guy you got to pay attention to. He's their punt returner, if I'm not mistaken, as well. He had a good punt return, if I recall. The rest of the receiver group, I'm not worried about. But Dortch and Marvin are guys that I think could be problematic.
Yeah, Marvin Harrison only 11 targets in the two games. Greg Dortch has 10 in the two games and leads the wide receivers with 8 receptions, albeit only
Okay.
for 58 yards. Michael Wilson, as the other starting receiver we mentioned, only has 3 receptions for 36 yards. So that's it. So if you're not Marvin Harrison Jr., there's only two other wide receivers that have caught passes from Kyler Murray this year, totaling 11 catches for 94 yards. So worst receiving core the Lions have faced so far.
Yeah.
The Rams and Buccaneers having, bet, I mean, the Rams not anymore. All they have left is Cooper Kupp. I mean, Cooper, he got hurt, right? So like
Right.
last week, so that's evaporated, but they did start that game with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, and then the Buccaneers, like, and it was one guy in both of those games. It was Cooper
Right.
Kupp in week one and Chris Godwin in week two that did the damage as far as wide receivers go. So Lions kind of in the same position.
And I
Marvin Harrison
think
Jr. is the guy who could do the damage, if you're gonna have one guy
right.
damage.
But I think what's interesting is that the guys that did the damage were out of the slot.
Right.
And so that's could be why Dortch is getting Dan Campbell's
Praise from
attention.
Campbell. And is that a sleeper fantasy pickup for you? Is Greg Dortch
I mean, yeah, there you go. Like, look,
into a
they're gonna
flex
play.
position?
I mean, he may only play like I said, he only plays about a third of the snap, so don't get mad, but
Don't go crazy.
yeah. But like if you're desperate, I guess maybe you could give him a gander.
Little too early to be desperate in the fantasy season. Tight
Well,
ends.
you never know.
Well, you never know. Yeah, you could have the whole team wiped out by now.
Right.
Tight ends, Trey McBride, Elijah Higgins, Tip Riman, Travis Wolkolek.
So, McBride's really good. He's basically going to be he gets targets like a receiver does. So he's going to be a guy that the Lions are going to have to
Leads
account for.
the Cardinals in targets, 15.
Higgins is so McBride's going to be out there majority of snaps, 80, 85% of the time. Higgins is going to be out there a little over half the time. Ryman, the rookie, third round rookie, he's going to be out there about half the time. Ryman is a guy that we really like because his blocking is like it's just sensational. And
Possible
so,
Lions target we were
oh
thinking
yeah,
about.
for sure. But I think all Yeah, I believe all three of them got over 50% of snaps in the last game, and that's because of how they'll run it. Like they're not scared to run 12 and 13 personnel and use a lot of tight ends because their tight ends are contributors in the passing game. They're also contributors in the running game. And I also think that this is why the Lions will counter with a lot of base because they want to have bigger bodies, and the Lions think they have the athletes in those bigger bodies to be able to counteract what the Cardinals want to do.
All right. Offensive line, left to right. Left tackle, Paris Johnson Jr. Left guard, Evan Brown. Ooh, center was it? Yo Lot, Froholt. Right guard is Will Hernandez. Right tackle, Kelvin Beachum.
So Paris Johnson was their first draft pick of this regime. They went to Ohio State. They went tapped into the Ohio State program for both their first round picks, or early first round picks, both in the top 10 guys. He's good. He's good offensive tackle. He played right tackle for him last year. Shifted over to left tackle. So every once in a while, you'll see him a little bit. He'll get a little bit loose, or he won't have the right ankle. But he's a talented player. Evan Brown, I think, is. He's a good center, but I think he's not strong enough to play guard. And I think this week he will get a heavy dose of Aleem McNeil. And I think Aleem will show him his lack of power is it could be a problem. So the Aleem Evan Brown matchup is one that I think should certainly favor the Lions. Froholt's okay, but I think he's the weak point of that offensive line. He's just an average to below average starter, in my opinion.
But he's a
Hernandez.
Dane. He's truly Scandinavian, directly from Denmark.
Hernandez has been around for a while, right? Got drafted by the Niner or no, the Giants, right? If I'm not mistaken, he was a Giants guy back in the day. He's solid run, good run blocker.
Drafted by the Giants.
Beachum is the guy who took over for Jonah Williams. And Beachum has played okay. He's played good. He's clearly a backup. He's not a starter. He's looked okay. Wednesday, he went to practice, no problem. Thursday, he showed up on the injury report with a hamstring injury. Midweek injuries, especially hamstring injuries, are potentially problematic. Remember, we were talking about Isaiah Williams. With the Lions, he got a hamstring injury on a Thursday and he missed Friday's practice and then he was out for the game. So Beachum is potentially now, in my opinion, he's could be in danger of missing this game. And so if they're already on their backup right tackle and then that backup right tackle now goes down, you're talking about Jackson Barton that they're going to have to turn to play offensive tackle. Potentially against Aiden Hutchinson, who inexplicably could get another backup tackle to face off against for the third week in a row. So, yeah, it could be a big midweek injury if Beachum can't go.
Offensive line, these road graders, 355 yards rushing in two games. So.
So it's interesting because I've been looking, and this will be up in my article that I write on the preview article for this game. But like, I've been looking at like efficiency numbers, versus like pure statistical numbers, and so like right now the Packers lead the league in rushing, but if you look at their like efficiency numbers, they're like middle of the pack to lower middle of the pack, lower half of the pack. Lions are like ninth in total rushing yards, but they're like the number one team in efficiency. The Cardinals, I think, are like they're in the top five in rushing, but they're still pretty good in efficiency. Like they're one of the rare teams who are actually good kind of in both areas. And I think it's just they have been efficient with what they've done, and the fact that they don't give up on the run regardless of situation, I think speaks to the fact of why they tend to be they've been so much better this year than they have in years past.
All right. Let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball, coordinated by defensive coordinator Nick Rallis.
Yeah, he's
I thought
young.
you might want to say something because he's a
Yeah.
youngster.
He's 31. Like, he's young, young. Broke into the league in 2018 with Mike Zimmer on the Viking staff. Eventually, got to the point where he was an assistant linebacker coach with them. He then took the Eagles linebacker job in 21, was the Eagles linebacker coach for 2 seasons with Gannon as the defensive coordinator. And then when Gannon left, he went right with him. So this is a guy who only had two seasons as a position coach before he became a defensive coordinator. And so he's young, young. So he calls the plays too. Like, it's not like, hey, like a lot of head coaches where Gannon is a former defensive coordinator, so it's his defense and he still calls the plays. It's not like that at all. He has turned it over to Rallis and let Rallis kind of do what he wants. He runs a 3-4 base and spend a lot of time alternating. Like, they'll shift to a 5-1 or a 4-2 depending when they go into nickel, but they spend a lot of time in their base 3-4. They like to keep three down linemen all the time and then adjust the linebackers. They'll either adjust where the off ball guys are, or they'll use off ball at edge positions, or they'll cycle through their edge positions. But they'll mess around with their fronts a little bit. On the back end, it's a lot of zone, like almost strictly zone. Like, they have a lot of Vic Fangio influences. Cover two, cover four, keep everybody in front of you, play off coverage. So you're going to give these guys a lot of free releases. So a guy like Amon-Ra, who you're just going to give free releases to, you're going to let Amon-Ra catch the ball and then hope to tackle him. You're going to give Jamo a free release and just try and like zone his side so that you can't get to a point where he just beats a guy and then he can catch a ball 50 yards down the field. So they're going to lean on a heavy amount of zone. And because of that, the slot receivers have done really well against them. Slot receivers tend to do well because that's how you can bust a shell. That's how you bust the Fangio shell. You run them off with the deep threat, and then you throw underneath to your slot guys. Slot receivers, tight ends can do well against this defense. They prefer linebackers who can cover, so much so that some of their linebackers are a little bit smaller. And that's why one of the reasons why they stay a little bit bigger up on the line. And because they try and run the shell and keep everything in front of them, they don't blitz a ton, like 22% of the time, so lower half of the league. But it's going to be very different than what we saw last week, where the Bucks blitz from all over the place and at a higher rate. And so the Lions will be able to reintroduce things that they did well in week one and have done well in the past. I expect them to be run heavy. I expect to see more play action and lean on those slot guys to try and beat the zone underneath, and then still have the threat with Jamo to go deep, if they want it. So it's an interesting defense, but not one that they're unfamiliar with. I do think the Lions have an opportunity to get back to basics against this defense, though.
All right, along the front line, Bilal Nichols, Roy Lopez, Justin Jones up front with LJ Collier, Kyrus
Yeah.
Tonga, and Dante Stills as their reserves.
Yeah, Jones kind of locks one side down. He plays that like 70% of the time. Lopez is their nose tackle, so nose tackles play 40-50% of the time. That's what he gets. And then Collier and Nichols, you'll see those guys probably split the other side, right? Like, you'll see them like 35-40% of the time each. And that's kind of how they run it. There's not a lot of confusion with their down guys. They get creative with their linebackers, but their down guys are kind of like, it is what it is. Jones is on one side, the other guys are on the other, and they have one nose tackle that they lean on. Tonga's going to see snaps too, but it's not, he's just the backup nose. Like, It's not like he's a pivotal player. I think Lopez is a decent nose tackle. Jones is a really good free agent who I don't think has quite settled in yet. And the other guys are all kind of average to below.
All right, linebacker group, Zaven Collins, Mack Wilson Sr., Kaiser White, and Dennis Gardeck. Gardeck leads the defense with 3 sacks.
So this is a lot like what we've seen from the defenses the last couple of weeks. You got two outside linebackers and then two off-ball linebackers. Xavier Collins and Gardeck are your pass rushers. And like you said, Gardeck is the guy that nobody knows about, but he's actually led their team in sacks last year. And I think he's leading this year as well. And so he's pretty efficient. Thing is they don't just lean on those guys. Like they rotate the edge guys quite a bit. So Chris Barnes and Victor Dimuki, and then even Julian Aquara are all going to
Oh
get
boy.
rotated through. So yeah, so like I don't think any of their edge guys had more than 50% snaps last week. That's how much they rotate guys through. And then to add on top of that, when they go to nickel and they just want one off the ball, like they go into like they're kind of like where they sometimes a lot of times they'll take their edge guy off and they'll keep one off ball, which would be Kaiser White, and then Mac Jones. I'm sorry,
Mack
Mack
Wilson.
Wilson. Mack Wilson will slide over to one of those edge spots because Mack Wilson's a little bit bigger. He's like in the 240s, maybe low 250. So he can kind of occupy an edge spot as well. And so they'll push Mac over as well. And then Kaiser White, he's a former safety. They'll use him at the mic and try and keep him, even though, like, okay, when you have Mac Wilson and Kaiser White, White will play the will. When they shift to a nickel, and if White is still on the field, he'll play that edge and then Wilson shifts to that spot. Then Kaiser White kind of shifts to the middle. Like they like White because he can cover, right? And so they're going to lean on him. They use him like 80, 90% of the time. All the other linebackers, again, less than 50%, because they will turn to Owen Popoey. He's super fast linebacker. He gets on the field about a third of the time. And then, yeah, I think, they'll use Chris Barnes there in the middle as well. So like they lean on all their edge guys and all their off ball guys. Like it's not just they have a starter. It's like they have 10 guys and they use them all. And so they do this to try and keep them fresh. At the same time, I think there is a drop off to when the starter level talent's on the field versus when the backups are on the field. And so, look, Gardeck is a guy who has a lot of sacks, but he plays half the time. So that means the other half of the time you're going to get a chance to not have to worry about him, and you'll deal with a guy like Julian instead.
All right, defensive backfield, Sean Murphy Bunting, Starling Thomas. They go into the nickel, Garrett Williams, the nickel back. Coming off the bench, Kytre Clark, Max Melton, the rookie, Darren Hall.
Again, they kind of will rotate these guys as well. Almost all of the defensive backs have the ability to play the slot and play on the outside. Almost all of them. Because of that, it affords them the ability to kind of match up the way that they want to. Murphy Bunting is their free agent, right? Acquisition. I don't think he's quite the player he once was. Starling Thomas is, of course, a former Lion who was the UDFA last year that they cut, and then the Cardinals claimed him and threw him right in the starting lineup. He's doing a lot better now than he did when he was with the Lions. I thought he did pretty good then. Garrett Williams, he might actually play more than Starling, and you'll see him on the outside at times. But again, it's like a rotation. They will also use Max Melton, the second round rookie. They'll use him like half the time as well. So it's not like there's any one set like group that's going to be out there. They're going to rotate these guys, try and keep them fresh, and they all kind of have a similar skill set in the fact that they can play at different spots on the field. So, I don't know if you'll see Clark, like he's another one of their defensive backs, but you certainly will see the four that we mentioned: Murphy Bunting, Thomas Williams, and Melton. They'll all get playing time.
All right, the safeties, Jalen Thompson and Buda Baker, with Adrian Taylor-Demerson and Joey Blunt off the bench.
Thompson was a emotional leader for them, leading the team in tackles and stuff like that last year. I don't think he's played very good this year. I thought he was a little susceptible, but they lean on him a lot because Buda is, he's everywhere. He is a guy that they will keep deep at safety. He's a guy that they will drop into a linebacker role. Like sometimes they will go into a sub package look, but then use Buda at linebacker level. So it's a sub package group of players, but a formation that's more like a base. And you can do that with Buda because he's just so good at it. He comes downhill like a freight train. His ability to diagnose is elite. His instincts are elite. And he's a really good film study. So he understands tendencies and how to anticipate things. And he's really good at, figuring out like snap counts and cadences and stuff like that. So he's a terrific player, one that they will absolutely have to account for. And the way you kind of, account for him is you have to just, one, you have to figure out where he is. But then two, you have to be efficient in what you do. If you're running the ball, you have to still be able to run despite him coming into the box, like I said, like a freight train. And then you have to be efficient throwing the ball because then that will force him to drop back a little bit. You have to be efficient in your play action because that will freeze him and that will force him to then stay into his coverage lanes more. So efficiency is key to keeping Buda in check because he might be the best player on their team.
Six-time Pro Bowler, three-time All-Pro.
Definitely their best player on their defense, but you could argue him and Kyler are in contention. He's a fantastic.
All right. Defensive backs, it's a healthy group for the Cardinals, not a bad group either. Last week, we were going on and on about Tampa, their decimated secondary. Everybody's hurt all over the place. Lions are going to feast on it. If you look at statistically, they kind of, golfed through for over 300 yards, but it was on like 55 pass. Was it 55 pass attempts?
Yeah.
And they weren't the weak link. They weren't.
Mm-mm.
They held up that taped together defensive backfield. Like
Yeah,
they
but
didn't surrender any huge plays. No, they did. I mean,
no, but I was gonna
could have
say,
been worse.
I think what you pointed out at the end of our podcast last week was that it wasn't the starters that were injured, except for Antoine Winfield. All the other starters were healthy. It was just the backups, and they never really needed to turn to the backups.
I guess
And
you're right.
so blue. I mean, obviously they were down Winfield, so that was, they were missing a Pro Bowler.
Hurting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but and they adjusted, and I thought, yeah, they did better than we were anticipating for sure.
Right. Kicking group. Kicker, Matt Prater, ageless wonder, 40 years old, 4 of 4 field goals. One of those field goals was for 57 yards. 76, 78.6% touchdown percentage. It seems that the experiment of the new kickoff has kind of turned into just taking the touchback now every time.
So he has kicked it short twice, and both times he kicked it short, the other team returned it to the 50 or beyond, or just a little bit beyond. He also had one where he kicked and it landed short of the landing zone. So he got a penalized for like a 40 yard. So he's had three big hiccups in the kicking game. And I wonder at what point do they just say, forget it, we're just going to kick it out of the end zone, because they've been gashed
I think we're already
in
there.
game. I would think so too. Like the Lions are not The Lions have only kicked it short once, and apparently that was on accident. So, but the Cardinals have purposefully put the ball in play, and they've been burned by it. So, I would not be surprised if they eventually just say, we're just going to kick it deep.
Punters Blake Gillikin, solid 46-yard average for, he's been in the league 4 years. He's fine, nothing special. He hasn't had a punt. You know, he's had only three punts this year. None of them have been inside the 20. It's nobody to write home about.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
All right, you already talked about the return men. Greg Dortch's punt returner, DJ Dallas, has his kick returner also returned a kick for a touchdown. Long snapper is Aaron Brewer.
All right, so this
Oh, you
time
pulled up some information.
Brewer entered the league with Denver. And when he was a long snapper in Denver, that was when Matt Prater was Denver's kicker. And he was actually the long snapper on Prater's record-setting 64-yard field goal that he set in Denver back in the day. He was part of Denver's Super Bowl championship in 2015-16, and then he was cut the next season. So, and now he's in Arizona.
13-year long snapper.
There you go. I learned about him.
I like it. All right. So they have a solid, we're going to say he's a solid long, Super Bowl
Yeah.
champion long snapper.
And has a long history with Prater.
All right. So who's going to win this game, Eric? I think you had it.
No, believe it or not, you
Oh,
had
because
it.
I had it closer, right? And they
Yeah,
ended up
you
losing.
so you ended up edging me by a point in the differentials because you went a little bit lower on Tampa's score. I had Tampa scoring 24. You had Tampa scoring 22. Tampa scored 20, and that was the difference. That even though I was closer on the Lions, you were 1 point closer than me overall, and so you get the win. So we are tied 1-1 through 2 weeks, just like the Lions. So, I will hand the floor over to you,
Yeah,
and you get to pick
to seed
first.
the, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of want to pick them to lose, but I don't know.
Oh.
No, they've got a lot to figure out still. And but
Yeah.
the Arizona's strength is like running the ball, and
Yeah.
it's hard to go against the Lions here. And they do it like I've been burned by the Lions so much over the years that I don't recognize that they're a good team now. I struggle to recognize they're a good team now.
Right. Keep in mind they are favored, right? So
This is a terrible
three.
time to be asking this question. They're
They're
favored by three.
over under
Over
is like
under.
51 or 52, 51
Yeah,
and a half,
this
I think, is
what
something
was
like
50 and a half last because I went 29-22. I think I went a half point over.
that. Okay.
They're gonna go under this number.
I would.
Lions 24-23.
Ooh. All right. I picked mine ahead of time because I got to pick mine for the staff one. I'm not too far away from you though. I have a little bit, just a little bit more scoring and a little bit slightly larger margin of victory. I have Lions 24, or sorry, 27-24. So I'm a little bit higher than you. I do think the scoring has been down. But I do think Vegas has it right that this is a game where we could see some fireworks. Both offenses, I think, can be explosive at times. And I think the Lions, this is a perfect opportunity for a bounce back game. I'm expecting a heavy dose of the run, especially early. And the Fangio shell is nothing that the Lions haven't seen. They see it against Minnesota all the time, twice a year. They saw it and previously a bunch of last year. It's not going to be anything they're unfamiliar with. The front is you just need your offensive line to hold up, and I think the offensive line will certainly be capable of doing that. So I'm confident. I'm looking for a bounce back game here, and I expect a show. And so what that puts me at 51. So I guess I'm taking the over too, which is
Slight over.
Just a slight over. Yeah, it's yeah, I don't know. I think the way the league has been so far, it's been a lot of lower scoring games, but
Right, but it's
I like,
early.
yeah,
The offenses don't have it figured out yet.
I like this one to go, to go fireworks.
I'm gonna, and I've already kind of said it that, like, well, they could easily lose this game. I've said that 3 times, right? All 3 weeks. I'm gonna say it 14 more times, and everybody's listening to me like, all right, you say it every week. Who cares? Yeah, of course. And it is the NFL. Like, even because the Panthers are gonna win a game or two, like, they still are capable of beating any team in the NFL. They're also an NFL team. So the Lions are always in danger of losing, but I don't know.
Joe,
I hope they get back on track. This is a hopeful 24-23.
I looked at last week's schedule and I said there's a lot of close games, but there's, in my opinion, these six teams are better than the team that they're playing. And of the six teams that I picked, four of them lost. So,
Oh yeah, well, all yeah, all the teams
that's,
that are
yeah,
seen as good, not all of them, but a lot of
a
good
lot of
teams,
them.
like Philadelphia, why did I only just come up with one? But there's the Cowboys, they got
Yeah.
embarrassed.
49ers lost, Ravens
49ers, yeah, that's
lost.
the other big
Yeah.
one. Yeah, so it's,
Yeah.
and the Ravens lost, right?
Yeah, Ravens too. Yeah.
So it's no reason for alarm. There are a lot of other fan bases that are sitting in our position this week, and it is
Yeah.
that, and it's perfectly clear to show, hey, this is week two, and all these teams are going to lose games, and some of them aren't going to make any sense. Although the Lions losing the Buccaneers makes sense. They playoff team last year, they're a good team. It's not like, wasn't a bad, it was only a bad loss in the aspect that the Lions couldn't get it done offensively.
I said on the POD cast, probably cast, the POD show that I'm on, the podcast show that I'm on during the week, that I think Tampa is one of the top five teams they'll face this year. I know they have a handful of really good teams on the schedule, and they have like eight playoff teams that they have to face, but I think Tampa's a top five team. When the season's all said and done, I think we're going to look at Tampa and be like, yeah, they're a lot better than maybe we gave them credit for.
All right, going to the reviews. Apple Podcasts, we got a bump, a few reviews, a couple of written reviews. Very nice, both 5 stars. One of them from SHC Hartley, the other one from Shooter 007. So that's wonderful.
Nice.
The SHC Hartley, it's very long, and it's very nice. Also got a bump on Spotify, so that's great too. So everybody, hey, keep them coming. We really appreciate them.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's, we appreciate everybody listening. Even if you don't review, keep on listening. I don't, anything to add Lions wise, Eric? Oh, Joe Schmidt dying. We should have talked about it last Thursday. It
Yeah.
probably nobody listening to the show saw him play one play live in their light lives, I would assume. I don't, I
Yeah.
mean, you'd have to be in your 70s, and maybe we do have some 70-year-old listeners, who knows? But there's not a lot of, star back in the 50s and early 60s as head coach for a
Yeah.
long time. Maybe Barry Sanders is probably the greatest Lion, and there's probably not a lot of art, but if you have the Mount Rushmore of Lions, Joe Schmidt's on it.
Yeah, he should. I mean, he's in the Ring of Honor. Like they've, I don't think they use his jersey anymore, right? He's one of the guys that they
I
don't
believe,
use.
yeah, it's one of the quote unquote retired jerseys.
All right. Yeah, just the resume is impressive for people unfamiliar. And like you said, as a player, as a coach, he did a lot. And it's always tough when you hear about the legends of your franchise passing away. But I mean, that's an inevitability, and you just have to take the time to appreciate what significant contributors they were to the organization as a whole.
8-time first team All Pro, 10-time Pro Bowler. played only till he was 33. He was, you know, just like
Right.
was able to do it in a relatively short period of time. So changed
Impressive.
the middle linebacker position, you know, as the game was becoming super popular on television. So it's too bad. But yeah, as you pointed out, you know, as the greats of the franchise pass away. All right, that was it. How do you feel about the Wolverines? Feeling better, feeling the same?
No, I'm feeling the same. I feel the
Yeah.
same about them. I was
I
more
feel
excited.
slightly worse. Oh, go ahead. No, you're more excited about what?
I was more excited when I saw the Spartans game, because I
Yeah,
got to
because they don't
see
look so good.
no, because I got to
Oh,
see
yeah,
old Tommy Schuster.
Tommy Schuster, the
Yeah.
backup. He looked pretty
Yeah.
capable out there, and it was
He
against
did.
Prairie View.
It doesn't
But
matter. He looked good. He was efficient.
yeah, and it made me feel better if Aiden Childs goes down, that like at least there's somebody competent back there
So
backing him up.
for those who don't know why we're talking about Michigan State's backup, Tommy was a former student of mine, and he was also a former student of my wife's back before I started covering the team. I was a teacher, and yeah, I coached or coached. I taught him and his three other brothers, two of which are also college quarterbacks, and I'd never gotten a chance to see him play in college, and so I was excited to see him out on the field. And I tell you, when he scored the touchdown, I was equally excited to see the joy from the other players around him and congratulating him for getting into the end zone there. I thought that was really cool. It's always nice to see how the teammates react when, you know, someone's able to do something cool. And he's a good kid. And I was, you know, I think you could tell that by such a positive reaction from his teammates when he found some success.
This is getting a little deep for the pod. We're going to go to our third layer of football for the podcast. Was he, I believe Chippewa Valley won a state championship. Was he the starting quarterback of that state champ, or was it
Oh,
one of his brothers?
that I don't remember.
All right.
I don't recall, but yeah, the boys just went through that Chippewa Valley like that. Ironically, the Dakota High is like their, you know, one of their
Rival,
like
yeah,
rivals,
it's same
right?
school district, right?
And Dakota's coach, Greg Bauer, was the Lions High School Coach of the Week last week. So if we want to put a bow on that, and I know Greg, I was at his one of his kids' graduation parties over the summer as well. So we're just putting it all together here, right?
Right. Tie it all together. That's enough name dropping out of you.
Well, they're
I
high
was
school, you know, like I mean
it's a great weekend for the Spartans there with the 40-0 victory over Prairie View. Although there were some errors, like, we'll see. Still, I'm trying to keep it calm. 3-0 is a great start. They're at Boston
Absolutely.
College on Saturday playing a night game, so
That's a
see how that
tough
one
one.
works out. That'll be a
That's a
tough one.
tough one. I don't know how Michigan's gonna do against USC. We'll see.
Yeah, they'll be fine. Breaking in a new quarterback.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. When your starting quarterback throws three interceptions against Arkansas State, I think it's time to switch to the other one.
Wonder why they didn't go. I mean, I guess because there was all that upheaval. We might have discussed this. They played deeper into the quote unquote college football offseason than anybody else. And then their coach, you know,
Sure.
had to evaporate, and so they may not have had time to get a replacement quarterback. And maybe they felt good about
Like
Davis
in
Warren
a
and Alex Warren in the portal, because
Yeah,
that's what
yeah.
everybody does, you
Well,
know.
I thought they recruited a kid that has like a lot of potential too, if I'm not mistaken, but I don't know.
He's
I didn't
down the
follow it
depth chart. He's
closely.
redshirted, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't follow closely enough to speak on it. Like
That's why
I'm to
this
the
is not a
point
Wolverine football podcast.
I'm to the point where the guys that I covered are no longer there. Like when I covered the Wolverines for 1 year, like it was like those guys and the guys that I saw recruited and all that stuff, like I don't know any of them anymore. Hutchinson was really kind of like one of the last guys. Like after that, it was all just kind of watching as a fan.
All right. That's it. I think we're done for this week.
I
Everybody enjoy the
agree.
game on Sunday. Let's get the Lions back on track. And until next time, let's go Lions.